In a world full of distractions, there is one big question on every dog owner's lips.
How do I become more than just the person holding the other end of the leash?
We all get dogs with a dream in mind, a vision of the future. And if right now your everyday reality isn't quite that picture you had in mind, you are in the right place.
It really doesn't have to be this way.
You absolutely can and will be more to your dog than just the person who gets in between them and the world.
The key is you need to be more sexy.
More sexy than the neighbourhood cats.
More sexy than the jogger in the park.
More sexy than that half-eaten hamburger they just found on the floor.
And yes, even more sexy than the dog across the road.
I'm Tom.
And I'm Lauren.
Together we're Absolute Dogs.
And you're listening to the Sexier Than a Squirrel podcast. Hello and welcome to the Sexier Than a Squirrel podcast, the podcast that gives you real life dog training and, I suppose, dog health and dog results.
Yeah, you can kind of think of it as like a one-stop education for all things dog owning. And actually, we're talking about one component of your dog ownership that all of you will be, you know, we'll have to consider. And actually, you know, there's a real lack of information out there, and I think you're going to learn some new things.
And now really is the time, because I don't know about you, Tom. I mean, you know, I am a cold person. And today I've started to feel like spring is really in the air. Yesterday too, actually, it was really a bright day. And so now is typically the time that ticks, fleas, bugs, and all things creepy crawly. I'm sorry, guys. I know you're going, ugh, because they kind of make your hair on your back and neck stick up. Those ticks when you go over your dogs, and if you haven't ever found one, I'm happy for you. But if you have found them, you know you're sort of rolling your hands around their skin, you're giving them a nice stroke, and then you go over this little bump. Kind of feels like a nipple, I'll be honest. And then you run your hands over it and you go, oh no, it shouldn't be there. It shouldn't be there. And then you rub your hand around it again and you go, oh, it is. Yeah. And then you part the coat and you might see a tick. Yeah. Or possibly worse, you might see fleas or flea dirt, or you might find a bite on your arm.
Oh, you just triggered me to think of something that happened when I used to do a lot of like first opinion vet work. It, on a weekly basis, I would have different men, not the same men, but a man would come in and say, I'm concerned because my dog has these lumps on them.
Oh,
and
no.
I would say, their nipples, and then the guy would reply, but he's a boy, and I'd say, but you have nipples. And literally on a weekly basis, it'd be like a different person, different dog.
So
it's
funny.
Like, but you have nipples, don't you?
It's almost similar, Tom, to I had a I don't understand the answer to this one. I had a blood test and it came up that I had testosterone. I was like, oh, I have testosterone. And I was like, shocked.
We all have it.
I was genuinely shocked. I was like, does this mean I am manly?
Bombshell.
It was huge for me, I have to say. My blood test shocked me.
Yep, so with that, guys, boys have nipples and girls have testosterone as well. So there we go, that was this episode.
So
we're talking about parasites, we're talking about fleas, we're talking about ticks, we're talking about those internal worms that your dog gets.
Oh, the crawly feeling.
And the challenge is that actually there's not much information about what to do in this scenario. And often we, you know, this is one area where we might do things and we kind of might just sort of do them blindly because that's what we've always done. And we've not taken a moment to almost re-evaluate. And, you know, often that is in the form of putting some kind of chemical on or
and
in your dog.
That chemical on and in your dog, it's that typical one-stop shop. You pop to the vets, they do the job for you. It's a monthly tick the box and you feel like you've done the right thing. Actually, this episode is really a bit of a wake up. It's a bit of a ask questions. It's a bit of a realization that there could be more you could do for your dog, or there could be something different you could do for your dog, or maybe let's just ask some more questions and let's think about it. This should be thought provoking, and this also should certainly be educational. So I'm going to say right from the offset here, get ready to share this, get ready to tell someone about it. Get ready to maybe let your neighbour know, your friend, your sister, your mother, your brother, literally someone else who has a dog, a cat, or basically these are questions we should be asking with our animals.
Absolutely. And I think it starts with actually, first of all, do we fully know, do we fully understand what we're doing when we give our dogs, you know, chemical parasite control? Because I think that's, you know, one thing that, you know, we see often where it comes out of the colourful box and there's a cute little puppy on the front of it or something like that and we apply it, but actually what is going on? And so if we take the example of like spot on
type treatments.
So, you know, a little bit of liquid, part of the hair, a little bit of liquid on the back of the neck. Well, spot ons typically contain two types of chemicals. it's sometimes one or both of these. First type of chemical is a pesticide that spreads across your dog's skin and then has been designed in such a way as to persist for a number of weeks. So already, like, that's interesting, like a chemical that has been designed to spread across skin and persist there for a number of weeks. Already I'm thinking, like, interesting, what about when I touch my dog? What about, you know, when other family members are in the house?
What about when my dog rubs up against the sofa, rubs up against my leg? What about the fact this is on my dog's skin, actually, is one of my biggest questions for my dogs. I have a dog who was diagnosed with a cancer. I have a dad with cancer. You know what? I have a dad with cancer. My dad has cancer. Like, literally, it's a question, right? Like, we just, like, thinking of, we're putting pesticides on our dogs that spreads all over their skin. We touch our dogs. Our dogs touch the furniture. Our dogs might get bathed. Our dogs might go in rivers. Our dogs might go in streams. Like, just starting to wake up and ask some questions. Also, Tom, at this point, I do think whenever I've used those treatments, because I've certainly used them in the past, I don't currently use them, but when I have used them, they always have lots of warnings about touching them on your skin. Mm-hmm. So they have lots of warnings. So they're in quite sealed packages. They're very clear about not touching them or getting them on your skin and what to do if you get them on your skin, and actually quite high, strong warnings about skin and touching, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And in fact, you know, the other type of chemical that can be in those spot-ons, really commonly in them, and often there's two different types of drug in there, is a chemical that works by a different route, where actually it's absorbed through the skin into your dog's bloodstream and then goes to other areas like their digestive tract to deal with, like, worms and things. And so, again, I think sometimes when I'm speaking to owners, you don't realize, and rightly so, because, like, no one's telling you that actually when we put that on our dog's skin, that's getting absorbed into their bloodstream, and then, that's the goal of that, right?
Then in turn going to the gut and other places. And so I think just being aware of that, whether you like it, whether you don't like it, whether that sits well with you or whether that doesn't sit well with you, having that information, you at least can then feel a bit more empowered by knowing it.
Because what we're saying throughout this podcast is chemicals are like an absolute no always. What we're saying is we don't want you to just adopt a blanket approach to this that actually might not be suited to you, your dog, your household, or the environment. And then, you know, some of you might be listening, you're like, well, I don't use a spot on, but I use a tablet. So some kind of anti-parasite.
I remember being I can't remember which country now. I was traveling with my dogs, and to travel them back into the UK, you had to sign to have them. They had to have a tablet. I wasn't overly keen on them having the tablet, but they had the tablet. I signed to say the vet signed to say they'd had the tablet, and we got back into the UK. And afterwards, I looked at the tablet, and I think this was the moment that I didn't realise probably how much impact that tablet could have. And it was a very small tablet, Tom.
Yeah, because
and made palatable for the dog, so the dog would even eat it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the key, is that tablet doesn't, you know, go into your dog's digestive tract and not get, you know, not go into their body. And just kind of deal with the parasites there. Instead, what happens is actually that is, again, getting absorbed and then effectively re-excreted to do its job. And, you know, when you think about the tablets that work against fleas, what happens with those is the chemical gets absorbed through the gut, goes into the bloodstream, it goes to the tissues that are just under your dog's skin, and effectively sits there for weeks to months waiting for a flea to have a little bite, and then effectively the flea gets exposed to that chemical.
One of my biggest questions, and I'm asking this, I suppose, provocatively, is that the frequency that I have seen fleas in the last 10 years or ticks where I live, certainly there's a period where you see ticks. It's about to kick in, like now, and it'll be here for about 3 or 4 months.
Yeah.
And that's kind of when they're rife. But actually, this seems like such a massive sort of like hand grenade into an area where actually I probably could be a little bit smarter with what I'm doing.
And there are some locations, exactly, and there are some locations in the world where a blanket chemical approach is, you know, needed, because maybe there are disease carrying parasites, but actually in most locations, the risk benefit analysis actually will tip the other way, away from a blanket approach. And I think the other thing that's not considered when we're thinking about this is that our dogs have an immune system. The reason why some dogs go through life having had no, you know, protection None. Against fleas and don't get fleas is actually because their immune system is doing its job, right? And equally, that would be the same for worms. You know, for many years, especially in the horse world, we don't do routine blanket worming. And what you find is that if you take 100 horses, they will, you know, pool the stool sample and you look at, you know, the presence of worm eggs in that, yeah, there will be lots of worm eggs. When you actually then do the individuals, you find that there will be a few wormy individuals that are very prone to this, and then there'll be others that actually are not wormy at all.
Interestingly, I mean, we, Eliza and I have three ponies, and with the three ponies, they all came from different places, but two of the three were absolutely fine. And the one that actually came from the probably the best place or the nicest place, he actually wasn't so fine. And so we treated him, but we didn't treat the other two. Yeah. But interestingly, our thought was the two that were from probably the less likely to have wormed or the less likely to have had rituals, routines, and probably more of a rougher life, really. Mm. Those two were fine.
Yeah.
And so I think that's interesting because it's not even predictable necessarily. No. This is something that's individual dogs, we or horses, you test individuals, not the whole group, right? Yeah. Like look at the individuals. The other thing I think is worth thinking about here, Tom, is that there are so many schemes. We're so busy, right? We're so busy in day to day. Like I get it. I understand that we're so busy on a day to day basis. Sometimes it's very easy for us to think, I've ticked that box. If I've joined this membership scheme, if I've joined that health scheme or that vet scheme, and it makes life easy to think, right, done the spot on once a month, done. Mm. And I think I can understand why people would accidentally fall into that trap of, and like I said, it might be right for them in that area, but it might not be. But it's the busy thing.
We've both done the blanket approach in the past.
Oh, definitely.
Before kind of questioning it. You know, I remember growing up with house cats, right?
Oh, God, fleas were always a problem when I had cats.
Yeah, but we had house cats. So literally, they lived effectively.
Oh, so they didn't go out at all.
Yeah, they lived in the house, right? And I remember, like, it used to be like a family thing that we would look on the calendar where we put the sticker for the flea treatment, and then cats don't like having these things anyway, right?
Wrap them in a towel.
And in hindsight, I'm like, oh my goodness, and they were house cats, and we were like, no, you must have this, because you know, we effectively until we know better, we can't do better, and actually. Until we question something and think, actually, you know, a tailored approach is always going to be better than a blanket approach, whatever we're thinking about. And that's especially true when it comes to our pets.
Absolutely.
Right?
And I think, again, like you said, like different, like we have a feral cat who's now made herself at home in the house. Mm-hmm. For me, I actually would be considering her as a candidate for let's actually test her and let's see, because she is a feral cat. She's been everywhere and she is everywhere and she's always catching things. Mm-hmm. And so for me, she would be more of a candidate than probably Tokyo, right? Like I've got to look at my dogs and look at her potentially differently. And that doesn't mean that we need to go blanket approaching her. It actually means we might worm count her and other things.
Yeah, absolutely. And so then there's this other, you know, component that we want you to really get almost skilled up on and aware of. And that is that there is an increasing problem of resistance to the commonly used chemicals against parasites. And that's whether, you know, especially when we're talking worms, but generally we are seeing that that effectively parasites are developing resistance to the commonly used chemicals. Now, that has a couple of big impacts. First of all, it means that effectively there might be a situation where actually your dog has a resistant parasite. Okay. Second thing.
And you're still using your blanket chemical anyway.
Yeah.
Right. So you're using the blanket chemical, whether that's using it and effectively throwing your money down the drain, but also potentially putting the chemical on your dog and it has no good impact or no positive impact or no impact that you're intending for it for.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the second issue is that these parasites, they aren't just parasites of our pets necessarily. This has a big impact for agriculture and food systems. It has a big impact, obviously, for pet ownership, but it also has a big impact for human health. And so I guess we need to have like our eyes open to this, that what creates a resistance problem is blanket, a blanket approach. And that's why in horses for, you know, a long time now, actually it's been a case of saying, no, we can't do this blanket approach anymore. And it turns out that we need a tailored approach. And yet we need this to come over to pet ownership. And this is, you know, part of what we're
And this is why
about.
We're also asking you as an owner to share this. We're asking you as a dog lover to share this, because it's absolutely our intention to get this information out there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. And then the second big thing that we want you to be aware of is these chemicals, they are designed to persist. They are effectively designed to kill things. And that has an impact on our environment. And in fact, there's increasing evidence for this. And, you know, I'm sure as a dog owner, you have a great appreciation for nature and a great appreciation for the environment.
And just being like out with your dog in the most beautiful spaces. We live on, if you don't know, Tom and I both live on Dartmoor National Park. Mm. It's the most beautiful space, rivers, streams, wildlife. It is environment rich, right? It's beautiful space.
Absolutely. And there's this study that came out recently, and I'm just going to read from the study. So I'm not even paraphrasing this. Using data from the Environment Agency, we examined the occurrence of fipronil metabolites, and imidacloprid in 20 English rivers from 2016 to 2018. Now, those chemicals that I mentioned are very commonly used for pets, so for dogs and cats, as indicators of the potential contamination of waterways from their use as ectoparasiticides on pets, which basically means chemicals used against external parasites on the skin. Sites immediately downstream of wastewater treatment works had the highest levels of fipronil and imidacloprid, supporting the hypothesis that potentially significant quantities of pesticides from veterinary flea products may be entering waterways via household drains. These findings suggest the need for a re-evaluation of the environmental risks associated with the use of these chemicals in companion animals and the risk assessments that these products undergo prior to regulatory approval. Now, what this is saying, guys, is that these chemicals downstream of, you know, household kind of urban suburban areas are concentrating in the wastewater. Now, I hear kind of two things from that. First of all, it used to be thought that these chemicals, yeah, they could impact the environment if your dog swims after use. Turns out, no, even just your dog existing in your home, you know, bathed, being showered, you touching them, you washing your hands is enough.
And then rubbing up against your clothes, you washing your clothes, right?
Second thing is, if this is wastewater, what actually about the source? What actually about our homes? What about our home environments, the environments we spend time in, the environments we raise our families in? There is a lot of research that needs to go into this, and it's now kind of, you know, becoming apparent. And what I love, I guess, about this episode of the podcast is you're hearing this now, and I think everybody will be hearing it in 5 years' time. It will be a very known thing. Some of these chemicals have actually been banned in farming for many years because of their environmental impacts, which is you know, significant.
It's significant, and I think it is. Like for me, I keep saying, wake up! Like, we have to look at this and go, hang on a sec. Why would we put this in our house?
Yeah.
Hang on a second. Why would we put this on our dog's skin? Mm. Hang on a second. Why would we want this in the environment? Like, it starts to make us ask different questions. And the thing that makes me a little bit scared, I suppose, is the normality of going and signing up to your membership club. I mean, I've got a membership club for the horse that what we get is the worm count, or we get 10% off bills. So it's a slightly different membership scheme. But I think the normality of go to the vets and once a month you pick up your flea and worm treatment freaks me out a bit now when I hear about this, because I realise the number of owners that will do that without asking a question. And like Tom said earlier, we're not saying this is wrong. Mm. What we're saying is ask the question and know whether it's right for you and your bespoke program for your dog.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, again, I'm a vet, right? And I am saying that these chemicals are really important in the overall control of parasites. What we're speaking out against is this blanket approach that is just kind of the default, when actually, when we realize what is happening in that blanket approach, we can, you know, begin to question things. And I guess the third element that we've got in this, if that all wasn't, you know, enough, all these reasons that we've given aren't enough to think against a blanket approach, just by the nature of animals, by the nature of whether we're talking humans, dogs, donkeys, horses, cats, guinea pigs, there is individual variation in how they will tolerate and how they will process a chemical when it is put in them or on them. And so a chemical won't suit every dog, but the challenge with these particular ones is that these chemicals are designed to persist for weeks or
and
months.
And you cannot get them off, right?
You can't get them out, right?
That was probably one of my biggest fears. I don't know if you remember, Tom, but I had an issue with pads in one of my dogs. Mm-hmm. Venture had real significant like pad blisters and sores and skin problems, which I was actually worried was going to go down the autoimmune route. Mm. It was my fear. We had used a spot-on on her, and I'm not saying it was to do with that spot-on, but I couldn't rule it out either. And we had probably 3 years of persistent struggles on skin, and we stopped using the chemicals and poisons in her. That has now been resolved. My biggest struggle, I think, when I look back on that is once I'd put that on her or in her, there was no taking it off, right? There was no, okay, let's put, say we've, I don't know, put a collar on them. We can take the collar off them, or say we put a harness on them. We can take the harness off them. There was no getting it out, right? And so the thing that persisted for her was pads, and she had sores in pads, and I don't know if you remember blisters, and it was pretty raw, and it was painful, and we couldn't, she was struggling. It's certainly in agility. I couldn't do agility with her, and I couldn't even take her on any hard walks, so anything that wasn't grass. And my biggest, I suppose, fear is that people put something on or in their dog and then there's a struggle with it. And there's just no removal.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And so what we're saying is, chemical use is a vital option in some cases, but it's certainly not in every case. And it's certainly not the only option, right? And so actually, we started to look into this a few years ago. How could we? Because parasites are really not, ideal. We do not want our dogs to
absolutely
have parasites.
We don't want mites. We don't want ticks. We don't want worms. We don't want fleas. Like, none of those things are cool. Like, we don't want them. We don't want them for our homes. We don't want them for ourselves. We don't want them for our dogs. We don't want them. They're just not cool.
Yeah. And what it led to, as it often does, is effectively, looking at what evidence is out there for other options. And it led us down a path of actually looking at foods, or, you could call them superfoods, that actually have a level of activity against or to prevent these things.
And historically, these things have been used, right? Yeah. Like, historically, over time, when I think about some of the things that we're going to talk about, I know that these have been frequently used in the past, right?
Absolutely. You take like pumpkin seeds, right? Pumpkin seeds have something in them called cucurbitin, right? And what that does, the activity of that when fed to an animal, is that it paralyzes worms that then drop off the intestinal walls. Also, pumpkin seeds are really full of B vitamins and zinc, so promoting and boosting that immune system that's going to be really important against parasites. And in fact, there are lots of studies on pumpkin seeds, and interestingly, in humans, right? So there was a study where they took a group of humans that had tapeworm infection. So tapeworms are the big ones, right? And what they did is they fed those humans with pumpkin seeds, and only pumpkin seeds. And 75% of the humans with tapeworm infection in the study expelled whole tapeworms. Now, you might be thinking, I bet that was, 6 months down the line of having a pumpkin seed diet, right? That doesn't sound very appealing. So let me tell you, the mean time, the average time period for complete elimination of all the tapeworms in those 75% of that group was 14 hours, 10 minutes. Okay, so that was actually quite, that probably was quite parallel to if we gave them a chemical wormer, we would kind of expect a similar thing. And, let's actually look at research comparing it to a chemical wormer. So very commonly used chemical wormer is ivermectin. Okay, and what the next study did is compared ivermectin to extracts of pumpkin seeds. And ivermectin achieved elimination of the gastrointestinal worms in 91% of cases. The pumpkin seed extract achieved the same result in 85% of cases.
And that's it, like, right? One thing alone, right? Like, pumpkin seeds alone.
That's just feeding one food.
And there's no combined effect there. And it's one natural food, right? I've got pumpkin seeds in my cupboard, and I definitely don't feel worried about having them sat there.
Yeah. And you've got no worms.
Thanks for that, Tom. Thanks for that.
We've had her tested, don't worry.
Yeah,
she has testosterone, but no.
But no. Okay, moving on.
Black cumin seed is another one that is really is a really important
this
one.
This one I know throughout COVID, knowing quite a few different people in this world. This was something that a lot of people I know took during COVID and actually took it again in a preventative way, not for worms, but actually for infection and I suppose looking after the whole system.
Yeah, because this is something that's been used for centuries, and actually there are studies that show that it seems to reduce the ability of the parasite to lay eggs and attach themselves to the intestinal wall, while also damaging the adult worm, which leaves it more susceptible to the dog's immune system. And so again, effectively, we're targeting multiple points of that life cycle. Imagine what, and there isn't a study to look at this, but just imagine, combining those numbers. What if you fed pumpkin seeds and black cumin seed?
And interestingly, the black cumin seed oil, if you try to give this to your dog, I don't think they're going to be that receptive, right? No. So these are things to listen to, because I definitely have drank some black cumin seed oil. You put a few drops in water and oh my, like there's an interesting taste. So we're going to keep talking.
Now, there are other superfoods that came out of this research, like fennel. Ginger is another one. So there's evidence that ginger may have anthelmintic effects, in other words, antiparasitic effects.
Antifungal, antiparasitic on the whole is a great, great, great superfood, like really powerful superfood. And all of the things we're talking about, not only, are individually powerful, but actually the combination can be really powerful.
Absolutely. In fact, in animal research, both ginger powder and ginger extract had antiparasitic effects, with respective reductions of 26% and 67% in output of worm eggs after 10 days of feeding ginger. And so again, we're kind of talking very short time frames, especially when you think about combining these superfoods. Cinnamon, another one. Cinnamon, interestingly, works really nicely with ginger, and there's really nice studies to show it used in combination with ginger.
And also Giardia, right? Being cinnamon being very powerful in treating Giardia, which so many of our tests don't always pick up, but actually is really rife, especially in areas like I said, Tom and I live on Dartmoor. Dartmoor being warm, moist, damp most of the season. Really, you go through that like from about March right through. It's just that moist, damp environment.
Let's
that
face it likes it, all to live year in. Round. Oh,
yeah. Well, the warm isn't. The warm bit, that's just no, not no, there. True. We're selling the space to you, aren't you? Come and live in Devon.
I love it.
Peppermint.
And the other thing with Giardia, just to say on that, is it's very common. It isn't covered by your blanket approach.
It's not covered, and also it's not easily picked up, actually. So even when you test dogs, it's not always picked up on a first, second, third round. Yeah. So actually, when I have had clients that have had struggles there, they might have to do multi-tests. So actually, for me, this is something I would preventatively treat in my superfoods. Yeah. It's not something that I could or necessarily want to go down the routine toxin poison route, but actually in your superfoods you could do this regularly without really with positive effects.
Absolutely.
Peppermint, selenium,
vitamin A, zinc, literally. I mean, to be honest, we could go on, and I think the key is that we found effectively these core ingredients that we saw as being transformational. They were pumpkin seeds, black cumin seed, fennel, ginger, cinnamon, fenugreek, peppermint, vitamin
say
A.
Say fenugreek again.
No, because apparently I say it differently. Zinc, selenium, and the power of probiotics when you're thinking about that gut microbiome.
Go on, say it properly. Go on.
Enterococcus faecium.
Yeah, have to do that.
The next challenge that we then faced is actually, okay, how do we get these things into our dog's diet?
Now, I'm going to be super honest here, Tom, because I'm going to smell a combination.
Yeah.
I'm going to smell
because
a combination.
What we did is we actually figured out a way of formulating these into a combination. So you could feed all of them in a scoop a day.
I think I could eat it. I genuinely...
It is actually delicious.
My dogs love it. My dogs absolutely love it. Tokyo was trying to... I mean, Tokyo's not a foodie dog, right?
No.
He's really... In fact, this morning he spat out a piece of food.
And there would be no way that you could get him to eat pumpkin seeds,
black cumin seed. I just know would not be a thing for him.
And yet, We managed to combine them in such a way.
You could put it in your dinner.
That is, I mean, it smells kind of like a curry. I don't know. But, you know, guys, I think what we're saying here is that we know that the only way that these ingredients are going to have action, like it's great that you now have this knowledge,
like
but actually you've got to feed them, right?
And genuinely, I feel passionately about everything we do, but this probably more than anything we do, because I know that I was the blanket approach once a month, buying the packets, going to the vets, put it on the calendar, put it on the skin, pop the dots on, make sure I tick the boxes. And I did that for a good few years. I mean, I can be completely honest with you, I haven't done that in the last four years.
Yeah.
And I have been doing a combination of this myself and trying to buy the supplements and grind the seeds and add the oil and find the things that I can't find sometimes.
And then you work really hard and then you put it in front of your dog and then they don't eat it.
They don't eat it. And also maybe something's out of stock or something's not available or maybe the way you've delivered it is different and so they don't like that. For me, this was an area that I needed help on because I wanted this to be easier.
Yeah.
Right, our days are busy. I wanted to do it. I didn't want to do the blanket approach.
No.
Of course, husbandry. I do good husbandry. I definitely check over my dogs. I feed them well. I look at the skin. I look at the coat. We have hands on them. Those bits are all done. I didn't want to use the toxic chemical on approach here. I don't feel we need to. And yet doing it in a way myself, Tom, it's too hard.
Yeah.
Like trying to combine those things and get them at the right level is too hard.
Yeah. And that's where we effectively then set out on a mission to say, right, what can we do to make this accessible to us and everyone else? And that's where we developed Bug K9, which is all of those superfood ingredients and the amazing results combined into something super tasty to the point where we might taste it because it smells so good.
It's going in a
Dogs
curry.
Love it. And I think the big thing that you often worry about when you're changing protocol is cost, right? And so actually the crazy thing is then when we developed this, we realized that not only is this tailored approach better,
it's and it allows you... It's a lot cheaper.
It's cheaper.
A lot
right?
cheaper. And, so, and not just cheaper in money, Tom.
Mm.
But what about health and longevity
and
life?
And the environment.
And your dogs, like, for example, if they do go and get an illness, like the fact one of my dogs in their pads, actually, that's costly. So it's not just the cost, it's the wider implication cost.
Absolutely. And, you know, you can actually start your dog on Bug K9. You know, if I give you an example, 20 kilo dog, just 50 pence per day. Right?
And let's be honest, do we have a 20 kilo dog? So if you're looking at our dogs... I don't really think, I think our dogs are all under that,
all
really.
Under,
like, what would you say? Casino's 12, 13 kilos?
Yeah, Bet is 13, 14 kilos.
Ketone, 6 kilos, 7 kilos. So we're talking, actually, that's based on a larger dog than any of ours that you might see us on the YouTube or in the super cool training academy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, literally, it's absolutely doable.
Yeah.
It's affordable.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, guys, you know, as a podcast listener and subscriber, the cool thing is that we've also got a very special offer for you.
Woo-hoo.
So if you head over to a-ok9.com/bugk9podcast, that's K as in the letter K, 9 as in the number 9 podcast. So that's a-ok9.com/bugk9podcast, and then there is a special offer just for you to get your dog started.
We've
on
got
Bug K9
information for you. We've got literally literature you're going to be able to be telling other people about and sharing and making the world wake up to this, knowing that not only can you help your own dog, you can help your family, you can help your household, and you can also probably have a bigger impact on the whole world when we wake up to this. So please share the information that you've had here today, because I really think this is like wow territory. And like Tom alluded to earlier, we believe that over the next few years, you're going to hear it in a lot of other places, and it's going to become much more widely acknowledged than it is today. And actually, the world will wake up to, why are we doing this blanket approach? Why are we going down this very, very heavy, this is the way to do it, when actually we really could wake up to bigger, better information?
Absolutely, guys. So head over to a-ok9.com/bugk9podcast. And I think you've probably learned a few things. You may have learned that boys have nipples. You may have learned that girls have testosterone. You may have learned that a blanket approach maybe isn't the approach for your dog. And you have for sure learned about Bug K9. We will see you next time. And remember,
stay sexy!
Hey, before you go, have you taken part in the worldwide Sexier Than a Squirrel Challenge?
It's a 25-day online video program, huge energy, amazing community, and over 100,000 people are already taking part.
The only question is, you know where you are today, where do you want to be in 25 days from now? Head to absolutedogs.me/sexy.